5 Face Off contains adult themes and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
He's Matt Hurst.
He's Matt Squirrel.
And this is Top 5 Face Off, the official world ranking of everything. What are we ranking today, Hurst?
Well, Squirrel, today we will be ranking the top 5 90s video games.
It's coming right up after this.
There's more than 5, call Squirrel and Hurst. It's the top 5 face-off. Actual facts. It's the top 5 face-off. Facts are exact. Top 5 face-off. Top 5 face-off. Official world ranking. What's next? You decide.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night to our rankers. Welcome back if you've been here before, and welcome if this is your first time. Squirrel, why don't you tell our new listeners what it is we do here and why?
Sure. Hello, rankers. This is Top 5 Face Off, the official world ranking of everything. In Top 5 Face Off, our Patreons suggest topics for us to cover, and we choose one at random, and we talk about it. We pick the top 5 and the worst from that topic. Today, we are doing 90s video games.
Lots to choose from.
It's been a hell of a topic, Hurst, but we can't jump straight into that. How terribly crass that would be.
I know, how uncouth.
Indeed, sir. How has the weather been today?
Well, today it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I went to the football, which I guess overlaps a little with our what's been going on. And I tell you what, it was absolutely shitting it down when I left the house. And when I got there, it was shitting it down even more. By the time I got to the stadium, it was absolutely fucking it down. And I was in the front row. But fortunately, my years of experience of going to football, I had 4 waterproofs. So things was okay. And as the weather kind of slowly improved, Reading went on to thrash Mansfield 5-1.
You never heard Ulrika Johnson use phrases like shitting it down or fucking it down when describing the rain, did you?
I didn't, no.
No. Oh, Hurst, I need to tell you this. We have had some contact from our rankers who are complaining that last week during the weather section, you didn't tell us how your lemon plant was doing.
Oh.
And people are invested in this shit now.
You know what? I apologise profusely. I've let you into something special and then taken it away. Well, this week, after having the near miss with the frost, it's been relatively sunny. So I've been having to water the plants. The soil's been drying out, so I've been keeping them all nice and moist. And yeah, it's flourishing. It's doing really well. Old lemony snicket. Good stuff.
Excellent. Weather's been fine here. Rained a bit today. I was in London. It was all right.
Cool.
What else do we talk about? What's going on, Hurst? Well, you were talking about the football, but have you already covered that, really?
What have you been doing? What's been going on, Squirrel?
It's Easter! Quick peek behind the curtain. It's Easter Monday today when we're recording this. It's quite late for us. We don't often record in the evening, but today we are. It's 10 to 9, which basically means we've got to smash the rest of this out in the next half an hour or Hurst is going to fuck off to bed.
No, it's all right. I've got my energy drink. We're all good.
Well, that's the thing. I can drink energy drinks. I gave up fizzy drinks for Lent, except for beer. Now I can drink them again. I had a can of Monster on Easter Sunday, and legitimately my head was just like zing, zing, zing. I could smell colour. Like, my eyes were open wide that day, I tell you.
What has been flipping your pancakes?
Tell you what has been seriously flicking my nards, Hurst. People may know that I drive about in a big van, delivering essential goods to people. What flicks my nards, Hurst, is when you're in a busy street, and you spy the house you need to go to, and you think, ooh, there's a parking space just up there. I can get in it. You get up to the space, and they've tossed some wheelie bins in it, because that's their space, Hurst. That's their space. No one's allowed to park in their space outside their house.
Fucking bellend.
Proper bellend. It's not your parking space. For a start, you're breaking the law. You're obstructing a public highway, which is a fucking offence, and I can call the police. I don't. I just drive my van into your wheelie bin. So irritating. So fucking entitled. It makes me very cross, Hurst, when I see it, and I make a point of moving their bin and parking there, even if there's a better space, because they deserve it.
Unbelievable.
Desperate for the day someone comes out and says, what are you doing? So far, nothing, because they're probably just twitching away at their curtains going,
that van driver moved our bins.
All right, well, do you know what's been twanging my banjo this week?
No, Hurst, please tell me what has been... Fuck, I can't think of one. No, Hurst, go ahead.
Well, It's another Americanism that has been getting on my nerves. It's the word oftentimes.
That's not English. Shut up.
You mean often? It's trying to sound smarter by making a word longer. And actually, I did come up with a word for that. It's called expandifying, making longer than necessary.
No, isn't it literally sesquipedalian?
Maybe, but I like expandifying.
All right. I'm sure all our rankers are looking forward to you using the word oftentimes in the future episodes like you've done with all the hyperbole words you claim to hate.
But I only use them in real life, not, you know, when something is epic, I will call it epic.
Mm.
When something is just a kitten walking across a pavement, I'm not calling that shit epic.
Unless the pavement is lava.
Yeah, that'd be epic.
What's making you feel old, Hurst? I am young and sprightly as always this week.
My mother came over this week and we went out for a walk and...
Hello, Mummy Hurst.
She's not listening. She hates this shit. She's way too sensible for us. Anyway, we went for a walk because I had the labyrinthitis and I can't go for a walk on my own, or I couldn't. I'm all right now. And so I took her for a walk to see one of my favourite trees. That's where I'm at in life now. I have favourite trees, and I took my mum to see my favourite cherry tree because it was very much in bloom and it was stunning. I mean, it's a perfect shaped tree. I'll send you the photo and you can crank it on the website so the rankers can enjoy it too. But
oh, God, that didn't happen the last time you said that we'd do this. It's just our website is not set up to do that. Oh, you sent me the picture.
I did send you the picture.
Rankers, I'm going to describe this picture to you. It's going to be a fucking tree, isn't it? It's a tree. It's quite pink. All right, excellent. Did your mother like it?
She fucking loved it.
Nice.
She was so happy that I took her to see a tree. She told my nephew, who informed me that she'd told him when we went to see the football.
Whole fucking family, man.
Yeah. Maybe I'm not getting old. Maybe we're just weird.
Maybe. Maybe a bit of both. There you are. Top five trees. Please don't do it to us, patrons.
No, I don't mind that.
We don't really love a repeat of Cornish animals. Speaking of us, how would you like to know how the rankers felt about our choice of musicals?
I'm sitting on the verge of a triple defeat, and you are sitting on the verge of the three-peat. That's three in a row. That'll be a brand new.
That's never happened before in the history of this podcast. What a time to be alive if it comes in, Hurst.
Well,
I'll tell you this. It's close. Hurst, I've never done this before. I'm going to share my screen with you, and you can reveal the vote. Here it is. It should be fairly obvious.
Oh, fucking hell. Three in a row. Well, congratulations. Those are the official world rankings. Why don't you tell us what the official top five are?
The Rocky Horror Show at number five. Number four, The Muppet Christmas Carol. Number three, Little Shop of Horrors. Number two, Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog. And number one, The Blues Brothers.
Right, so what's some of the comments?
Yes, sis, someone that voted for you. I say someone, it's Trooper. Trooper, who voted for you, said some actual classics, none of this modern rubbish, because he's fucking power old like you are, I guess. Also, all the films are musicals, unlike someone else in the competition who shall remain nameless. I think he means me, and he's talking about the Blues Brothers. There was lots of debate among the rankers about the Blues Brothers being a musical or not.
Yeah, somehow he still won.
Someone who didn't put their name on it, but it must be Malk. Blues Brothers is all I needed to hear. Also, I don't work with Chip and Pin anymore. Sorry. So,
yeah, Malk.
Malk can't fix that for us. But, Malk, you say anymore. Was it you that put Pin OK in the first place? Because if so,
what you got?
Hurst has a bone directly with you.
Bone directly? I'll pick it for sure. I'll pick that bone all day long.
Another one for me. Blues Brothers is my top musical. Crast is wrong from Kovach. Thanks, Kovach. Dr. Horrible Forever from Meg98. Thanks, Meg. And first-time voter, Squirrel had it, but I'd swap number three to make it perfect from Majuli. I don't know what Majuli was going to swap number three for. So there you are. Yes, by 17 votes to 16.
Well, considering one of yours was borderline not a musical and another was borderline not a movie.
It's absolutely a fucking musical.
You've done pretty well to somehow win with a nearly movie and a nearly
more
musical.
More than anything else, has it's now officially the best movie musical of all time. Yeah. Official.
Unfortunately, I can't deny the facts, because the facts are exact.
Shall we do the same for 90s video games?
Let's rank the fuck out of this mother.
Before we flip the coin of destiny, Hurst, how did you find narrowing this down to five this week? Because I found it bloody difficult.
It was crazy difficult, I would say. But yeah, let's see who's going first.
How can we do that, Hurst?
Well, I suggest we flip the coin of destiny.
It's got two sides on it, Hurst. How do we know who is who?
Simple, Squirrel. Heads for Hurst, Squirrels have tails.
Up she goes.
Flip it.
It's his or hers.
Sweet. Okay.
Let's hear them.
My number five, which is going to be proper niche. I'm hoping some of our nerdy Malcolms will. Now, it's called Shinobi, and it was out on the Game Gear in 1991.
The incredibly well-known and best-selling franchise Shinobi is pretty niche.
Game Gear Shinobi? Is it best-selling?
Yeah, well-known? The one where you could jump up on the ceiling because you chose the red ninja. Hell yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think it's... Look how happy he is. Yeah. He's so happy that I know what he's talking about.
I've just not seen it since. It's been so long since that. It's kind of a franchise that must have died out, though. For me, it was the first game system I had. My own gaming system was the Game Gear, which was an 8-bit handheld. It was brought out to compete with the Game Boy, but it was vastly superior, but had the downside of approximately a 2 to 3 hour battery life with 6 AA batteries.
It just ate batteries, right?
It did. But you could get around that by getting an adapter. But then you might as well just have a Master System and play on that instead.
Yes.
Although at the time we didn't all have tellies. It was, I could play it wherever I wanted, whenever I wanted. Anyway, I got the Game Gear and I absolutely bloody loved that thing. I was so made up, my first video game console. And the first game I got was Shinobi.
All right.
To give you a quick background, terror and destruction made their way to Ninja Valley. The master of the Oboro School of Shinobi sent his best students to investigate, and they returned with news of a powerful dark force that's established a base in Neo City. Finally, he sent out the Red Shinobi, Joe Musashi, and he must carry out the mission. And as he goes through being the oldest and the strongest of his ninjas, Musashi uses his special skills in the art of ninjutsu to free his fellow shinobi. So as you go through the levels, we're talking a scrolling beat-em-up, like early doors. You go through with the Red Ninja, and eventually you unlock his other shinobi pals.
Who look the same, but they're just different colors.
Yeah, absolutely. And they have different weapons. So our Red Shinobi starts with a sword, and then you've got the guy with the grappling hook, and then the ninja stars and all of that. And you go through the levels, and eventually you meet this massive bad dude at the end, and you've got to kill him off. Now, the thing with games back then is there was no save. If you died, you start again at the very beginning.
Back to the beginning, and they were bastard hard.
So you could play this game for like 2.5-3 hours. You get to the final boss, you get killed, and you have to start again.
Yep.
So the feeling of accomplishment when you finally defeat that end boss was immense. I loved that game so much. And just looking back at it this week, seeing, first of all, the Game Gear itself gave me the butterflies, the exciting butterflies. Oh my God, this Game Gear, Game Gear. Then looking at the cartridges you used to stick in, just like, oh. And then just the Shinobi cartridge, just the amount of joy that game brought me was absolutely incredible. And that was my first foray into video gaming, which I still love now.
Excellent. I also had a Game Gear. It was probably also my first games console. And yeah, it just used to chew batteries. Like, it wasn't worth putting a minute, right? You could play it on the school bus on the way to school, and that would be it. That'd be all you get. You know, especially if you're buying cheap supermarket batteries.
Yeah.
But yeah, Shinobi. Interesting choice. My number five, Hurst, we're coming forward just a little bit in the decade. I'm going to 1993 with Sensible Software's Cannon Fodder. Now, Sensible Software got famous by making Sensible Soccer, which was a top-down view of tiny little men playing football. And it was a lot of fun. If you like football, it I didn't really like, but I did like Cannon Fodder, which features the same tiny little men, but they're shooting people instead. At its core, it was a very simple game. You used a mouse. You had a little platoon of men, say 3, 4, 5 of them. You'd left-click, and they would walk towards it in a line. You'd hold down the right mouse button, and they would shoot towards your cursor. That was it. It was that simple. Your little man got absolutely brutalized by the enemy at every available opportunity because you weren't fast enough, and I'm saying you, but I mean me, to kill people in time. It was so simple. It was 2 buttons, technically 3 buttons, because soon you got grenades and rockets, and you could hold down both buttons to shoot your grenades or rockets, whatever you happened to have. And you could split your little men up into different squads and have them wander off separately, but the other ones might be getting hurt while you're doing that, so it was always risky. So simple. Just really bastard hard, like so many of the games in the early 90s especially were.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. It's still referenced today in some games. You've got things like Broforce, which has the same opening scene with the helicopter. But Cannon Fodder was just great. Your little men died, and every time one died, they got a little gravestone in the between level screen on the big hill. And it was kind of called Cannon Fodder, and you thought they were taking the piss out of war, but they weren't. They were really kind of saying, it just kills people, and it's bad.
And it's difficult. difficult.
It was bloody difficult. My number five is great. Cannon fodder.
I have at number four, Sonic the Hedgehog. Now, I said I was going to go with particular consoles because the games did come out differently. I had it on Game Gear, and I fucking loved it. It was brilliant. It was what we'd all been waiting for. I was Team Sonic, and my friend Neil ended up getting it on Mega Drive, and it was really, really good on that.
Different game.
But it was a different game, and I loved both of them, and it was being able to play both just... It was great. I could go home and play on my own system, but then play it on like the amazing 16-bit graphics of Mega Drive. For me, it was better than Mario, and that was the thing. Mario and Sonic were basically the precursors to Oasis and Blur later on in the 90s, the other big rivalry, and you kind of liked one or the other. And I was definitely on Team Sonic. I spent many hours on it, and it's got some great bits in, like, the whole ring-based life system.
Yep.
And you run through, and you're like, ding, 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 as you pick these up. As soon as you hit anything, basically, Sonic just spunked all his rings up all over the place, and you could pick a few of them up. To the point that it's even, I saw a meme not so very long ago with a bunch of silver curtain rings or hooks all over the floor. And it must have been gold curtain hooks, otherwise it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
And someone had written, oh no, something really bad's happened to Sonic. but it was like brilliant humour. So the original Sonic the Hedgehog, there was a lot that came after it. As soon as it started going in three dimensions, it was just too hard to cope with. It needed to be a scrolling platform game. And he was quick. So Mario had a lot of bouncing around. Sonic was just rapid. And he had to see what was going on quite a long way in the head and bounce off things. And yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed Sonic. So that nostalgia blast again, for me just looking at the games, the pictures of them, I was like, yeah, I'm all right with my choice at four. It all switched around, as we said, but for me, number four, Sonic the Hedgehog, Game Gear and Mega Drive.
Fair enough. As you said, I just looked at what my number four is in my notes, and I'm thinking, that can't be at number four. That's got to be higher than four, because everything's moved around so much. But I can't deny that the ones above it are also very good games. So my number four is a little niche game called Gran Turismo 2. Gran Turismo 2, obviously on the PlayStation, just sneaks in here, Hurst, December the 18th, 1999. So it is a 90s game, barely. Gran Turismo is a car racing game. You know this. And you drive your car around tracks. And it was, although still kind of an arcade game, it was trying hard to lean into the realism of driving your car around a track. But it never got quite to realism levels because you couldn't crash your car and kill it. One excellent tactic in Gran Turismo was to hammer into a corner as hard as you can, smash into the person in front of you, and send them cartwheeling off the track whilst you drove around at a now sensible speed. Gran Turismo 2 was so much game. 25 tracks is a good number of tracks in a game back then. 650 cars, Hurst.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you get 20 cars and you have to pay for every other car you want separately with microtransactions. 650 cars right there on that disc inside your PlayStation.
Microtransactions. You know what grips my shit?
Oh, yeah, goddamn. We can cover that one day.
Gran Turismo was mad, though, wasn't it? It was a completely new level of gaming. And actually, the original Gran Turismo was the biggest selling game on PlayStation. It was massive. So,
and
yeah.
Banging music, right? You had like the Garbage and the Cardigans and Apollo 440, Fatboy Slim, Propeller Heads, Stereophonics. Oh, God, well. Barton and Feet. Ash were there, Manson, Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
Just such. I'm guessing now that I stop and think about it, they're all part of the Sony Music label. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that
it?
Would make sense.
That would make sense. I haven't backed that up, Malks. Don't at me. And of course, on Gran Turismo 2, you could use the new, brand new DualShock controller with the analog sticks. This was a revelation in racing. No more do you have to hold down X to go and square to stop. You could use a stick and push it up and down and accelerate a little bit or steer left and right a little bit. In practice, I was never any good at that. I'd always like slam it to the left or right. I can never get the hang of just a little bit. Ask my wife. This was a big deal back in the world of gaming. Analog controls on a console.
Mm.
I was about to say it's never been done, but of course it was done on a GameCube. Don't at me, Malks, I know. I meant Nintendo 64. Sorry, Malks. And I know the Princetronic had one in like 1978, so more sorry. Anyway, back to the show. But it was done better on Gran Turismo 2. Number four, we've been drinking Rankers, Gran Turismo 2.
Yeah, and I remember reading about it in a gaming magazine, and they said they actually had microphones in the exhausts of the cars to get the right sound effects. They just, basically, they power stormed it. They took it to the level after the next level.
They did. And good on them, because they made a fantastic game.
Yeah, great stuff. So, my number three is Worms for the PS1.
Ooh.
Came out in 1995. Worms, for anyone who has been living under a rock, is
like a worm. Hey!
It's a turn-based game where a player controls a team of worms, and you name all your worms, and you play them against other teams of worms that are either controlled by a human opponent, one of your friends, or two of your friends, or three of your friends, as so often was the case, or a computer, and you could choose the different level. And the aim is to use various different weapons to kill all the worms on the other teams and have the last surviving worm or worms. Weapons included grenades, rocket launchers, shotguns, Uzis, and then cluster bombs. And then every now and then you get a little munchy box that would upgrade cluster bombs and give you a banana bomb, which was like having a cluster bomb with dynamite bombs coming out of it. They were brutal. We got it down to such a fine art that we didn't even need those anymore. It was all about the ninja rope. Wherever you were on the map, you were not safe. The ninja rope could be used to bounce and bounce and bounce. And then if you timed it just right and got the move right, it would bounce you right over the top. And you could, so you could work your way across the whole scenery. It was just a brilliant game. And actually where my online gaming handle, Dave Bad, came from was my captain of my worms team. Dave Bad, he's a bad man.
/ Worm.
That was his war cry. Yeah, he was a bad worm, but that was the war cry. So Worms was just brilliant. We had so much fun. I spent so many hours playing that ridiculous, simple, awesome game.
Holy Hand Grenade was always my favorite.
Yeah.
Especially in the later games where it went hallelujah before it exploded. Just so funny.
Yeah.
You'll regret that.
The little things the worm said.
Yeah.
And you could ping them, smash their face into the floor upside down if you dropped them. Yeah, excellent.
I'll get you. Revenge.
Yes.
Bye-bye. Oh, no.
On the PlayStation, though, Hurst, not on something with a mouse, like a sensible person would play.
No. We were sitting around at my mate Jay's house. No, it was we didn't do a lot of PC gaming after, after 93, 94. It was all about PlayStation. I mean, it was good on all platforms. I did play it on the PC, but for me, the one that I love, my nostalgia is on the PS1. But Worms as a game, flipping brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, PC gaming is for nerds, and who's going to choose a PC game for their number three? Oh, look, Half-Life. Half-Life is my number three. Half-Life was Valve's first game. Valve, of course, who now make Steam and basically control PC gaming via it. Once upon a time, they made games, and they made Half-Life, and it was very, very good. This came out in 98, so again, quite late into the 90s. The fact that it's on my list means that Quake 2 isn't on my list, and that makes me very sad because I love Quake 2 so much. But Half-Life, I've got to admit it to myself, was just a better game. It was one of the first FPS games, certainly, that really lent into the story and had lots of story beats, lots of voice acting by other characters, which was new for FPS games at the time. And it had a new physics engine called the Source Engine, which could do remarkable things with machinery. You could have robots with legs that moved and looked realistic, which nowadays, when you look at it, you're like, okay. But back then, it was incredible that everything was being generated in real time in front of your very eyes. The intro, where you rode the train into the Black Mesa's facility and the robots moving around and forklifts picking things up. Incredible. It was a very... what's the word I'm looking for here? Ambitious game, and it pulled it off, and it was great, and I loved it, and everyone loved it, and a million people modified it, and you got Counter-Strike, and you got Team Fortress 2 out of it, but Half-Life was there at the beginning, it was there in the 90s, and it's just a game I love. Number three, Half-Life.
Fair play. So my number two is... Tekken 3, which came out in 1998. The game was a major hit, selling 8.36 million copies on PlayStation.
Not bad.
Making it the fifth best-selling PlayStation game of all time. I loved Tekken 2. That was when we were playing Worms, Tekken 2 was kind of going on, and then Tekken 3 came out, and this was around sort of towards the end of A-levels and just going off to university, and I just got crazy good at it. So it's the third installment, as you would expect in the Tekken series, being that it's Tekken 3. And it takes place 20 years after Tekken 2 and features a largely new cast of characters. But aside from that, who cares? They threw a bit of a storyline at it, but ultimately they might as well have not bothered. What it was just an incredible beat-em-up versus game. Most of it was based on real martial arts moves. So where you had the likes of Street Fighter 2, no, honestly, it is like you can look through many, many of the characters and they are...
How about the panda?
I say not all of them, but many of them, even then, like the punches and stuff they throw. But if you think like Huang was Taekwondo and all of the moves he did,
he was my favorite,
albeit exaggerated versions of. And you've got Eddie in the capoeira, so that's all based on real moves. Lei Wulong was had kung fu.
You mean Bruce Lee had kung fu?
Okay, yeah. But so yeah, they were based on it. Where you had Street Fighter 2, which I'll be honest, really bothered my list a lot because it was again at that time I was so excited about video games and Street Fighter 2 was the ultimate. But by the time Tekken 3 came out, Street Fighter looked kind of basic and they had fireballs and electricity and stuff. So it was much more comic book fighting game, which was great. It had its niche. It did its thing very well. But for me, with Tekken, the fact that you could string together combos using proper kicks, and especially having done quite a lot of martial arts now, the kicks and things they do is like ideal versions of actual combat. So that was great. You could throw together like 15 move combinations. It had counters as well. One of my great achievements of Tekkening, I had two. One, I won a competition at university, Tekken 3 tournament. Ooh. But I also played against this guy who was at a friend of a friend's house who was like proper power nerdy and lived Tekken and had actually some world records at it.
Ooh.
And he played me the first time and I played as Paul. And in the first game I played against him, I beat him with a perfect and I countered using Paul. I countered every punch he threw at me. I turned it into a counter. And he was absolutely gobsmacked. He's like, I've never had that done. Granted, he then went on to kick the crap out of me for the next two rounds. Don't even care, though, because it was just an epic moment.
You got the moral victory, Hurst.
Yeah, yeah. And I know I hyperbolized epic moment, but it was fucking epic. It was the best round of Tekken I ever played. And I remember it vividly to this day. I was very, very happy. I loved Tekken 3. It was flipping great and very close to being my number one. Obviously, it came in at number two.
Interesting, Hurst, that you should talk about a fighting game for your number two, because I also have a fighting game at my number two. It's not Tekken 3 or Tekken 2 or Tekken 1. It's not Street Fighter.
Really?
It's not Mortal Kombat. It's not even Marvel versus Capcom. It's a game called Bloody Roar 2.
Okay.
Which... not enough people played. It was very like Tekken. It was a 3D arena fighter, one person against another person. You punch them about, you kick them about, you grab them and you threw them about. All very nice, all lovely. One of the best looking games on PlayStation. I will stand by that to this day. You can go back and look at it now and you will think, oh, this looks fucking awful. And of course you will. It's like 27 years old. But back then, wow, it looks incredible. But Hurst, the thing about Bloody Roar...
what was it called again?
Bloody Roar. As in bloody, like you're bleeding, and roar, like you're making a noise.
Oh, so not as in roars in like meat that hasn't been cooked.
No, and I'll tell you why it was called Bloody Roar, Hurst. It's because when you press circle, you turn into a fucking animal.
Mm, okay.
Imagine you're playing Tekken, you haven't chosen the panda, you've chosen Paul. But when you press circle, he just changes into a giant fucking walking lion and starts biting people as well as kicking them in the face. Oh my God, that's what you could do in Bloody Roar. Oh my God, incredible. It was made by Hudson Soft, famous for making Bomberman. You've probably played Bomberman on many a system.
I really have.
They also made Bloody Roar. They made lots of them, like five. But then something weird happened with the rights and they can't make any more, which is incredibly sad because I still contend it's the best 3D fighting game that ever existed. Bloody Roar 2. There go all my votes.
Fair play. I mean, I could do with a win this week, to be honest. Three in a row.
Couldn't get enough of it, though. Couldn't get enough of it. Any kind of decision that had to be made among your mates, who's getting up to get the next beer? Bloody Roar, three rounds. Right. Dealt with. Also, I was very good at it, which helped.
Yeah, it does help games when you're really good at that. Oh, fair enough. So we're up to the interval.
We are. We need to talk about the worst game of the 90s. So many games in the 90s. How did you manage to choose, Hurst?
I didn't. I looked through what are the worst games of the 90s? I didn't have any of them. I didn't play any of them. I can't remember games that I hated from that long ago. I wish I could think of something. Honestly, I don't have one. I don't have enough bile to send towards a video game from the 90s. So that's where I'm at on that. What about you? Do you have anything you hate that much?
Of course, yes, Hurst. Of course. I hate nearly everything.
Press on.
So many shit games to choose from. Widely considered one of the worst games of all time. Came out in 1999. Superman 64.
Yeah.
I haven't played that. So I didn't choose it. I have played, and I'd like to quickly apologize to the Vision for this one. I have played Rise of the Robots Vision. It's fucking terrible. Rise of the Robots was a massively hyped fighting game from 1994. It cost 43 quid. Interesting you're saying about prices. I looked at the inflation for 43 quid from 1994. Nowadays, that's the equivalent of paying £89, Hurst, for a fucking Amiga game.
Yeah.
It came out on every platform, but specifically, I played it on the Amiga. I didn't buy it. I stole it like everybody else with an Amiga did with their games. It was going to be the next best thing, and it just wasn't. I'm borrowing heavily from a review in a magazine called Amiga Power here, but this applies to all versions of the game. It looked fantastic. They spent so much time doing pre-rendered characters, which was a new technology at the time. They were figuring out where the light would be hitting them and then, you know, using 3D modeling to render these characters in a process that took ages. Nowadays, games run at 60 frames per second rendering on the fly, but back then this was, you know, hours and hours of work to produce a single frame, which they then took a picture of and stuck it in. So on the box, in the screenshots, it looked amazing, but it fucking wasn't. Also very interesting that you mentioned the fact the internet didn't exist. The internet didn't exist. So when they only gave out review copies of this game 2 days before the release date, it was another month until anyone could read about it and know that it wasn't the game that they wanted. So Amiga Power said it looked great. That was their good points. Then it just said the rest. It's such a bad fucking game. There's only 7 characters. Street Fighter 2 gave you like 12.
I thought it was Combat a beat-em-up, is it?
17. Yes. You just robots that fought each other. In single player, you have to play a cyborg who is a blue robot. And in two player, one of you has to be cyborg, presumably due to memory constraints. Brilliant start. It's barely any moves in it. If you hold upright and fire, you win. For the entire game, upright and fire, that's all you have to do. Don't even have to look at the screen. Just hold it down. You win. You'll win the whole thing. Presumably because of a much-hyped AI system that learned your playstyle and reacted accordingly. No, the CPU player would just get kicked 3 times and then crouch in a corner, letting you wail on it until it died. Brilliant. Brian May, presumably at great expense, did the music, which, again, due to memory constraints, was only on the title screen, and it was guitar going crang, 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 and that was basically it. The sound effects were shit. One of the special moves made you indestructible, and if you did it before your opponent, you win. There was nothing they could do.
Wow.
It was just such a dire waste of time, and so many people bought it because of the massive ad campaign and because the graphics were legitimately great and people couldn't read a review because there weren't any review copies going out.
That sounds like a proper scam, doesn't it?
Yeah, it almost does. I mean, people are still doing the same thing today, but yes, this is, I think, one of the first times that I remember people getting properly bitten by a game that was just shit, and they must have known it was shit because they played it, but they shipped it out anyway. I'm going to give the final word to the magazine I was talking about, Amiga Power, who always do kind of a 1 or 2 sentence sum up of any game. Hopefully they want to get it put on the box. This one's not getting put on the box because this was their December issue because it came out in December. They said, even if you don't believe in Father Christmas, it might be worth writing to him to make sure he doesn't bring you a copy of this. There you are. Thanks, MP. Wow. Thanks, JD.
I've got nothing. I've got the nothing for the worst. Fortunately,
doesn't matter.
Our worsts don't count towards the ranking. They are not to be taken into consideration.
Nope.
It is only our top 5 that matter.
Don't let her lack of effort put you off voting for a record.
So, with no further ado, sound the bugles. So, my number 1 is Mario Kart on the SNES.
Mm.
Released in Japan in 92, didn't come out in Europe until 93. Fourth best-selling SNES game of all time after Super Mario World, Super Mario All-Stars, and Donkey Kong Country. And Super Mario Kart, again, for anyone who hasn't seen it, where have you been? But just in case, player takes control of one of eight Mario series characters, each with different capabilities. Say each with different, they were kind of paired up. So Mario and Luigi had the same capabilities.
Sure.
And Bowser and Donkey Kong had the same. But there were eight characters with different things, cornering, acceleration, top speed and all that. And in single mode, you could race against computer control characters, or you could have up to four player if you had one of those special four player taps.
Yes.
And there were different race types. So there was the Grand Prix. There were 20 tracks, five in each cup. So different, four different race cups. Three difficulty levels, 50cc, which was really, really easy. You could win just because it was so slow. You never really had to worry about going off the track. Up to 150cc, which really was shifting, and you had to be good at power slides and all of the other moves to get good at that.
Had to use the brakes at 150cc, ridiculous.
Yeah. More importantly, it brought us battle mode. I remember a Christmas where when I got my SNES and I got Mario Kart and Pilot Wings. On Boxing Day, we had the three families, the Reading Road families. Each had two children, so there were six kids, six adults. And on that day, the kids played Mario Kart Battle Mode in Battle Arena 1, which is, still appears on the modern versions of it.
Mm.
We played it for 8 hours solid. And as I look back at it now, it's like, it was the greatest day for us, but it must have been the greatest day for all of the parents who clearly phoned in the whole parenting thing on Boxing. It was like, don't worry about playing all the games and that stuff. The kids are in the other room being quiet. We can just chill out and have a beer or whatever. And it was just the greatest day. And we got really very, very good at it. For me, Super Mario Kart as a series, fantastic. But as the SNES version, was the greatest game and probably would be in my top five spin-offs as well. Like on any format, game, movie, TV, board game, whatever. Super Mario Kart, what a great plan. Would you like to hear a fact and an estimated fact about Mario Kart?
Absolutely, I would.
Okay. Fact. The idea for Mario Kart was inspired by a glitch during development for the Super Mario Brothers game. Project team members noticed an error where the Koopa Troopa shell bounced back and forth across the screen, inspiring the initial concept for a kart racing game.
Ooh.
Fact. Tom Cruise was originally... No, just kidding.
Originally drove one of the karts. He's going to be Peach.
Fact, when Mario Kart first launched in Japan in 1991, there was no battle mode. It was added for the US market and released a year later.
I mean, the second one's true.
Sorry?
The second one is true.
The fact is, the idea for Mario Kart was inspired by a glitch during development.
Damn it.
Actually, it came out in the US the same year it came out in Japan. Battle mode was already there.
I'm very pleased that I continue my streak of being absolutely goddamn terrible. Fact versus estimated fact.
Yeah.
Mario Kart. It was indeed a great game. It troubled my list. It's in my shortlist right there. Not my number one, though, because my number one I chatted away about just a couple of weeks ago when we did reboots and remakes. Hey, Final Fantasy VII, step up to the plate. Oh, my God. But this time I can talk about the original rather than the remake. Final Fantasy VII was great. Shrug. What else is there to say? Final Fantasy VII came out at the beginning of 1997, so safely into the list of 90s video games there, and was a phenomenon. It was, as I think I said before, one of the first JRPGs, Japanese role-playing games, that really made it over to the West. It was epic in its scope. You played as Cloud. I say that in inverted commas because one of the first things you could do was change his name. So you would change it to something like Poop if you were being funny, or you would change it to your own name like everyone else, unless you were me, because you could only have 7 characters and my surname has 8 characters in. Very sad. Cloud was a member of Soldier, an elite group who fought for Shinra, who was very much a cyberpunk style corporation that ran most of the military and the police and all that stuff. But that didn't matter. At heart, he was an environmental terrorist. This is true. And they wanted to blow up reactors to save the environment. I don't know how blowing up reactors is good for the environment. We don't question this because the guy doing it was giant and he had a machine gun instead of a right arm. He was called Barrett, but you could change his name. So you changed it to Miss Barrett.
Barry would have been better.
Like the gun, like a Barrett 50 cal.
All right.
But everyone changed it to Mr. T, because that's clearly who he was. Just Mr. T with a machine gun for an arm. And it all fell apart from there. It all went wrong for our team of exciting adventurers. They blew up some reactors, sure. And some really bad dude called Sephiroth turns up. Anyway, you've got to try and stop him, and it takes 100 hours, and it's brilliant. And it will make you laugh when you go on dates with people, and it will make you very sad when someone dies. Spoiler, it's Ares. And yeah, I just say Ares, Malks, come at me. It's not Aerith, we live in the West. Anyway, none of this is making sense to Hurst. He's completely and utterly baffled by the things I'm saying here. Why can't you just give her a phoenix down, Hurst? Well, because she's not knocked out, obviously. But anyway, it was brilliant. It was absolutely superb. It's one of the best video games experience of my life. Probably number two, to be fair, but we won't get into what number one is now. It was very stylized in the way it looked, so it still looks okay now. And it was a revelation for so many people, including myself. So my number one is very predictably, because it's loved by so many people, but I don't care because, hey, Mario Kart, same thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy VII on the PlayStation. Holy crap.
Fair play.
Would you like a fact and an estimated fact, Hurst?
I would love both of those things.
Should we start with fact? Over 100,000 person hours of motion capture work just to get the animations correct went into Final Fantasy VII. They weren't using the actual people. They just wanted to know where the joints went and stuff like that for the rendered skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
Or fact. Originally, it was developed for the Super Nintendo, or the Super Famicom, if you're in America. But then it came out on the PlayStation, presumably because the SNES couldn't do what they wanted it to do grunt-wise. But bear in mind, this was the seventh one. The previous six were very different games.
Interesting. I like the idea of the effort going into the first bit, but given that it is a Japanese game and the Nintendo is obviously a Japanese company, Japanese system.
Well, all the consoles were back then, of course.
I suppose Sony is as well, isn't it? So,
yeah, and Sega.
Yeah. All right, well, and then fuck that whole thing. I'm going to go with the first bit as the fact. Your first one, the motion capture.
Over 100,000 person hours.
Yeah.
Into mo-capping for the animations. Even though earlier I said, ignore the fact that I wrote million in my lie by accident.
So I'm going to say that it's probably that's the second one.
The fact is, originally it was developed for the Super Nintendo. Yes, indeed. As far as I know, no motion capture whatsoever. It was originally in development for the SNES, but they wanted to move it to 3D, and even with its funky, what was it, Mode 7 chip that you could put into the SNES cartridges, it just didn't have the grunt. And they looked at the N64, didn't have the grunt either, so out it came on PlayStation.
There we have our top fives. Rankers, who is right? You decide. How are they going to decide, though?
Well, they think about which one of us they agree with the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then they let us know by going to the website top5faceoff.co.uk and vote for their favorite. Will it be Hurst? Will it be Squirrel? Hurst hasn't won for ages. No need to break that streak. Vote Squirrel.
But I did think as I was doing this list, like, oh yeah, that would be a popular one. That'd be, and I was like, what am I doing here? This is about my list for me.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather lose 10 in a row than compromise my list.
And sell yourself out. Correct, Hurst. Even though both of our number ones were incredibly popular games, I think that's just because they were incredibly good games.
Yeah, that does make for a popular game.
Exactly that. Mario Kart was on my shortlist. Speaking of shortlists, there were some things that I was devastated not to talk about. Quake 2, Street Fighter 2, Metal Gear Solid, for God's sake, Mortal Kombat, and Resident Evil, and Mario Kart. So I'm pleased you talked about Mario Kart, because I wanted to.
Yeah, there was bloody tons of them. You mentioned Bomberman briefly, and that we had some amazing four-player Bomberman with the same guys I was playing Worms with. And then, yeah, Resident Evil 2. Obviously, that was
in the remakes list, yes.
In your recent list, I thought that might have made the list. Metal Gear Solid, SimCity on the PC. I lost a lot of hours to that. Brilliant stuff. GoldenEye N64.
Yes.
Just amazing. And Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Oh, was that in the 90s? Oh, yeah, that must have just 99,
right, just inside. Just So much amazing stuff. Oh, Command and Conquer Red Alert. Yes. I love that
See,
game.
I was going to talk about it, but I was going to talk about Tiberia Wars, which was the third one, which actually came out in 2000. Also, yeah. So I was like, oh, well.
Yeah, they were brilliant. Command and Conquer was amazing. Yes, it was. I would say I wasn't much in the way of a PC gamer, but that really got my attention.
Many good games in the 90s. As you'd imagine, it was the decade of the Tomb Raider, for God's sake. We haven't even mentioned Tomb Raider.
Yeah. So, or any of the Super Marios. Apart from their car.
But let us not cry over the spilt milk, because our lists are in and they are final. And the rankers know what to do. So, shall we find out what we'll be ranking next week?
To the Wheel of Decisions.
Hurst, can you see the Wheel of Decision?
Oh, I can see it.
Would you like to hear about the two new things that have appeared on our wheel, Hurst?
I would love to.
So, after we covered one of Trooper's suggestions last week, he sent through another one, which is top five Gladiators.
So we've got, Blur or Oasis songs, top five Gladiators.
Along with such things as top five movie villain schemes, top five wrestlers. I'm still looking for top five big man action movies. This has got to come up eventually.
And I'm still rooting for the top five TV theme tunes.
Every week you want to do that.
I really want to.
Well, let's see if it comes in, Hurst. Are you ready?
Spin it.
She's spinning. Two cheeses have just gone past. It is Snacks to Have with Beer.
Snacks to Have with Beer. Love it.
A choice by our Patreon Wookiee, I believe. Thank you, Wookiee. So we will be covering next week the top five snacks to have with beer. Ooh. Other than that, rankers, we would like to thank you very much for listening. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, tell a friend. Just go out into the street and shout Top 5 Face Off Podcast at people. Scratch it into the window on a train. Oh, no, don't. We'll get into trouble. But do it, do it, do it, do it, rebel. Tell your mates. Leave us a review on the platform of choice. And if you've got some spare dollar, head on over to patreon.com/top5faceoff and throw some of it at us for some excellent bonus goodies. Just last week, I added an outtake which I decided was too filthy to actually put on our main feed, and you can only get it on Patreon.
And you can see the picture of the cherry tree on this page as well.
Hurst is going to put the picture of the cherry tree on Patreon, everybody. That's good to hear. Let's look forward to that appearing.
I'll post it on Instagram because I know how to do that.
But on Facebook! You know how to put it on Facebook? We don't have Instagram.
Do it on the Facebooks. Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Do you want to do it on the Facebooks?
Can you post a picture of your lemon plant as well?
Oh, fuck yeah. I will do.
Yeah. The rankers will love it.
If you have any, verb in my nouns that you want us to try out, send them on in.
Yeah, you can let us know on Blue Sky. You can let us know by emailing us hello@top5faceoff.co.uk. Post it in our Facebook group or just shout really loud. Maybe one of us will hear you. And if you want some excellent artwork to hang in your house, Hurst, where can people go on the internet to find that?
Yeah, they could go to doghouseart.co.uk, and that's definitely where you'd be able to find such a thing.
Excellent. And as always, a big thank you to the official supporter club. That's Ross Taylor, Dav Paz, and new this week, Kovach. Thank you very much, all.
You guys are heroes.
Other than that, there's not much left to do besides bring this one into land, Hurst. Thank you very much for listening, rankers. Please rewind this podcast for the next person to come along, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, thanks, rankers. See you next week. Love you. Bye.
Top 5 Face-Off is presented by Matt Hurst and Matt Squirrel and produced by Powerstorm Awesome Fire Incorporated. For more details and to vote for a winner, visit top5faceoff.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
So after we covered one of Trooper's suggestions last week, he sent through another one, which is Top 5 Gladiators.
It's on there twice, actually.
Fuck!
What has been flipping your pancakes?
Tell you what has been seriously flicking my nards, Hurst. People may know that for... Go on, you can laugh. It's like you spit drink over your keyboard or something.
We're good. Carry on. What's been flicking your nards?
I'm sure our rankers are really looking forward to you using the word oftentimes in the future, like you've done with all the hyperbole words.
My hyperbole.
What is it? Hyperbole, thank you. The thing is, it's spelt hyperbole. It sounds like something Americans play.
It's what happens after you've won the Super Bowl. You've gone up to the hyperbole. Mm.
Sure. Hello, rankers. This is Top 5 Face-Off. This is the official world ranking. The fuck? Twitching away at their curtains, going,
That van driver moved our bins.
And then being too pussy to do anything about it because I'm so fucking nails. We've been drinking, rankers.
Top 5 Face-Off.